Hey, kids. You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles, and pancakes. The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, and I feel like shit. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm doing better than you.
And Ellen, Chris, how are you doing?
Not feeling like shit, but I am eating pickles, which means I could feel like shit.
As you know, pickles are notoriously contagious.
Yes.
Pickleitis.
I'm eating chicken jerk wavy Lays.
How are those?
Those are delicious, by the way.
Yeah, oh, they're good. I don't even like potato chips, but these are great.
Some store. I'll have to give them a try. I've Pernell, you'll be excited. I am trying Baja Flash, one of the new Baja Mountain Dews.
Oh, how is that?
It's coconut Mountain Dew.
That's a dangerous game for me. I'm not a big coconut guy, but usually sodas have a way of making things that seem unappealing taste appealing. So.
Have I made you and try my versa. Nut Dew at MAGFest?
That does not sound right at all.
No, it doesn't. But have I made you try my Nut Dew at MAGFest?
No.
No. Chris, did I make you try it?
Uh-uh.
Man, I didn't make either of you try my Nut Dew. It's Mountain Dew and coconut rum. And this tastes just like it.
Wow. It sounds like it'll be good.
But non-alcoholic.
Isn't the other one supposed to be like pineapple flavored?
The other one is tropical punch.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who lied to me and told me the other one was pineapple? Because I was like, I drink a pineapple one.
Yeah, tropical punch, and it's like an orange flavor. And
fuck then that.
This one is coconut pineapple.
That one might have been it, but they didn't mention the coconut, probably because I don't like coconut.
See, do coconuts grow in the mountains?
No.
They grow in the Bar Hills.
they grow in our hearts. That's what
they only grow on the shoreline of Animal Crossing.
And man, are they worth money?
They pump them in when they pump in the sunshine. They pump us in some coconuts too.
Also, speaking of Animal Crossing, I thought it was pretty funny that I was reading a group of things today where people were complaining about how Nintendo is failing Animal Crossing. And it kind of made me chuckle a little. I was like, you know, Animal Crossing is a game that you paid for one time, and they continue to update it for a frigging year. Like, they just kept doing new holidays. And I think they still even recycle the stuff that they added later. So it's like, it'll come back later if you want to do it again. It's like, you got a pretty sweet setup there for a game that you paid one dime for and just got free content updates for a year. Let it go. Like, Animal Crossing, to me, I always felt like that game, if you can play it beyond, like, if you're playing consistently and you can play it beyond a year, you're a magical being. Because I don't see that much content. I don't see enough content to get me through a year, let alone, like, more than 1 year. And people are like, I put, like, 500 hours in. What a waste. Could they stop updating it now? Like, what?
You should see, like, my sister's village. She spent ridiculous amounts of time, like, laying everything out perfectly, getting pathways and, you know, lighting everything and walk. It just, she went overboard on her town, and it looks fantastic. It's amazing what some people could do with it.
Now, imagine her coming at you later and going, this game is stupid. What a waste of my life. Why? Because you just realized that you didn't think that the game wasn't really a valuable use of your time. No, because Nintendo stopped updating it. What? No, that's the worst reasoning I've ever heard in my life. No. But this is the kind of stuff people are bringing up, and it floors me. It floors me.
People still play the original Animal Crossing on GameCube, some people.
Yeah, when I think of Animal Crossing, I feel like the GameCube one was still probably the best one for, like, content that you can kind of carry forward, because it's going to sound dumb, but I thought the idea of unlocking, like, video game carts to then play with people who visit the island and yourself, that to me was a great idea. Like,
That's, yeah, those, I mean, those NES Metal games in Animal Crossing were pretty awesome. It's a bummer they didn't do that in future releases, but, you know, they had the Virtual Console that they had to push.
And think about it, even with Virtual Console, I think they technically still could do it, because the ability to play games with people that visit your island, I think, just makes so much sense. Because right now, if a person visits your island, they're just looking at your shit, but they can't pick half the crap up because it's probably locked down or something. So they really are just walking around going, wow, this is a nice town. Like, okay, that's great, but you want to do something? Like what? Nothing, because Nintendo gives us nothing to do when people visit our towns. Like, that, to me, should be like their major update for content.
You,
like,
can, hey, get shells together.
Ah, God, I could do anything. I'd rather do anything else. Anything else. You can watch stars together. I take that back. I'd rather get shells together. Like, it's just,
catch fish, go swimming.
It's like, you know, hit each other with your net. You could do like Marco Polo in the water. Like, even something as simple as that could be fun if they gave it the time. And it's just like, no, we don't want to do that. We want to just, the fun, the time and the fun is what we spent with each other. Like, fuck that. No, give me a game.
Someone's going to rip off Animal Crossing with proper online, and it's going to blow everybody away.
I'm surprised. In a sense, I feel like it almost already has. Stardew Valley probably comes fairly close.
Is that online?
Yeah, it has online.
Massively multiplayer.
Well, not massively multiplayer. I think you can have up to 4 people visiting. Yeah,
I'm talking like, remember they had Animal Crossing City Folk, where you could go into the city and, like, I would love to see a living Crossing, city so. That.
Well, you got to remember, though, how much, like, as far as like Animal Crossing, the new one goes, I think you could have as mostly 8 people in your town. Right now, 8 people in your town, unable to do anything. I feel like Stardew Valley bringing you 4 with tons of shit to do within the context of the game. I'd rather have that than 8 people doing nothing. So
you can't
only
even do
better.
Anything if you join somebody in Animal Crossing.
Well, the thing about it is, it's not that you can't do anything. It's just, so the game in Animal Crossing is basically collecting stuff. And one way or another, you're collecting stuff. Or you're maybe talking to your residents. So if you go to someone else's town, all you can really do are a few things. You can buy what's in their store. You can collect items that are on their island. So it's basically what you do on your island, just on theirs. So not particularly great. Sometimes there's events where they say, you might be like a bunny who shows up and says, hey, dig up some eggs and trade them in for stuff that you can collect.
Let's not talk about the eggs.
That thing was horrible.
Oh my God, like, the fucking
eggs. All the games
eggs.
In some way or some weird variation of that, whether you're digging up something or shaking something out of a tree. But it's all busy work meant to collect more things. But it's technically a concept where you're only doing the same stuff on someone else's island to collect more stuff. But if there was like an actual game behind it, as in like an actual thing where you collectively got together and played it, and it was something that you really couldn't do unless your friends were with you playing a game, I think that would be freaking great. And that would really expand on what that game can do. But for whatever reason, Nintendo's committed to just saying, hey, go buy a new pair of pants at that guy's town and then go home. Like,
they should find a way to integrate.
Online stuff is,
yeah, they're
Nintendo's online stuff is just bad.
Well, here's the thing, though. Nintendo's online is bad, but they get some of the game stuff right. It's just the online component is bad. It's like, for example, like before Mario Party developed online, people were like, Mario Party would be perfect online. Why can't I go online with it? Like, that would be the bad thing, like that you couldn't even do it or that the connections were bad. But the game works online if you can get it there. Animal Crossing, they just fucked it across the board. It's like, not only is the online problematic at times, but then when you get it going, there's nothing to do. Like, there's nothing to really say. Like, during the pandemic, it was great because, like, I need to talk to my friends and hang out, and really, I couldn't go anywhere. So it was like, it's great that I can just do it in this game. But now that I can actually go see them again or play other games with them, it's lost that luster, lost that magic for me. So I don't know. And I'm sure someone's listening to this right now is like, fuck you, I got 255 items in my catalog. I had a great time. And I get it. I totally get that. I mean, I said earlier, the game's a collectathon, but it could have been more. It should have been more. And after this many iterations of Animal Crossing, something that they put in the first game that never came back. Come on, man. Put a fucking checkers board. You can buy board games at the shop, but you can't play them. It just irks me. Like, they're just like missing the beat. Well, it's all about the time you spent with your friends. I would have put time with my friends playing games within the game. It's just kind of logical.
They need to find a way to integrate some of their other games into Animal Crossing. Like, integrate the NES and SNES Online lineup into Animal Crossing. Find a way to integrate parts of Clubhouse games.
Fuck, take the groups that do, like, say, WarioWare and stuff, or Mario Party, and just have them develop, like, a few mini-games that exist in that game, like, that you can buy at the store and play. So, like, it doesn't even have to be, we're playing NES games, but on here, I mean, it could be, like, these, like, little, like, laid-back, not too complex, but fun enough to want to keep playing them games that you're playing in Animal Crossing. Take the Clubhouse games, and put them in Animal Crossing. It's like
the 3DS did a couple of games.
New Leaf.
Yeah. You could go to an island and play games with like some people, but they weren't very fun. But it was at least on the right track.
I agree. Like, that would be the right track for sure. And like, I think this one had one island like that where it was, like, you went to this one island and it was like a little maze on the island. It was like, run around like some things before time runs out. I'm like, I mean, maybe hide and go seek would have been fun. I don't know. But, and I'm sure people might have been playing it, but it was like them making the game. It's like, hey, you hide and I'll find you. And if I find you, I win. What do you win? Just one. How do you know I won? I'll tell you.
I've lost because I'm sick and we fucking spend 10 minutes talking about Animal Crossing.
That's why we love you, Jill. You knew this was going to happen.
I know. We should get 3 reviews, though. We have reviews.
We do, but at least all of them will be fairly short reviews, I think.
Well, we'll find out. First game to talk about is called Strange Brigade, developed and published by Rebellion, released June 15th on the Switch for $34.99. Will you answer the call to adventure, erased from history and buried in a nameless tomb for 4,000 years? Sateki, the Witch Queen, has risen once again. Only one troop of heroes can stand against Sateki and her army of mummified monstrosities, the Strange Brigade. Purnell, tell us about your time with Strange Brigade.
Strange Brigade is a game that I didn't know really what to expect coming into it. Like, I saw the Nintendo Direct where they talked about it being a game on the system, and I guess I assumed it would be like a shooter, but what kind of shooter was more like it? So, going into this, I actually came away pleasantly surprised in the sense that it's not a game that is overly complex or technical. It's meant to be, I consider it to be dumb fun, is the best way to put it. So what is Strange Brigade the game exactly? Well, I perceive it as being a game that takes place probably in like the 1930s or something. A fake 1930s, obviously. And you are a team of quote-unquote heroes called the actual Strange Brigade. There are actual tales written about you. There are comic books written about them, which is something you know only because there's collectibles in the game that are like books about them. And it tells their exploits or whatever. So it's four members, and they are going to this particular island to find out what happened to, well, I'm not going to go into that because Joe basically described that, what it leads to, which is like you're trying to put this witch queen back in her tomb or whatever. But they go to take care of this queen on this island, and it works in the form of like a multiplayer, third-person shooter, though it doesn't have to be multiplayer. You can play it by yourself. There are 9 levels in the game. But the levels themselves are pretty friggin' large. So I feel as though the content in and of itself is still there because, again, it's 9 big stages with collectibles. When you go to a level, whether it's through the campaign or just going back to them to collect stuff, you'll choose a character of one of the 4. And they play fairly similarly. The thing that makes them unique is like there's like certain perks
unique
that they might
drink.
Have. Like, was, Christ.
Unique.
There's your uniqueness. So like, for example, one character might be particularly good at melee combat, while another character is better at like regenerating their like their fine throwables, and another character might be better at charging their amulet, which I'll talk about in a second. And then aside from that, the only other thing that they're different at is what their actual amulets are. Again, something I'll talk about in a second. So once you pick your character, you go into the game, and you are pretty much exploring the environment. And as you progress, I personally feel one of the best elements of the game, a narrator kind of narrates your adventure as you go. And he's like this like hackneyed British guy who does he really hams up the British stuff, like, "Oh, good show, Strange Brigade." Like, I try to think. And like, I swear, like I've not gotten tired of it. Like, it just, you pause, he says something, you open a door, he does that thing, Chris might know the word, what it's called, but basically, I guess it's alliteration, where you pretty much say the same, like, five different words, but they all start with the same letter.
That's alliteration.
It is alliteration? Oh, cool, good. We're like, what maniacal monstrosity manifests today for the Strange Brigade? He does that kind of stuff, and it just feels so great. But you're running around, you have, you can pretty much like do a dodge roll, you have a melee attack, you have your gun, two guns that you have equipped generally. You have your main arm, which has a limited ammo capacity, which can reload either from item drops or from ammo caches that are hidden, like just laying about the level. And your main arm, which is a piece of crap gun, but it has infinite bullets. So essentially it's designed to make it so you're never completely unarmed. It's just, you don't want to get to that point because whoops. And those are the things you have access to. However, as you kill enemies, they will leave souls behind. And you can hit the arm, the ZR button, which is, I guess, the back right trigger, to suck them into your character. And when you filled your amulet gauge up, you get a special move that you can use one time until you have to recharge it again. And every character has one that they start with. But then, as you collect collectibles in the game, you can buy up to three other ones per character, which they can only have equipped one at a time on a level. So what I mean by collectibles is that hidden throughout each level, there are generally about six or so like hidden tombs. And the tombs have treasures in them, but you have to unlock them by solving a quick little snippet puzzle that they have strewn about the level. And if you can knock it out, boom, you can get the tomb, get the collectible. And if you can fill one page worth of collectibles, each page having four items on it, you can get access to a point if you spend to unlock a new relic. You're also collecting a stupid amount of money as you play through the levels as well. And then, I suppose, like, dialogue and, like, booklets and stuff. At the end of a level, you're generally going to be faced with a boss fight. The boss fights can be pretty ridiculous or elaborate or just a swarm of enemies. But ultimately, they all involve you to going to town and just pretty much defeating the enemy. And when you're done, you'll get rated on your performance in the stage. They'll grade you on how much money you got, how many of the collectibles you found. And then you'll move on back to the main hub. If you go to the next stage, you can spend money you earn to unlock new guns, new fine throwables, basically projectiles. That's like calling them fine throwables. And also worth noting, they don't have a quantity, so you don't collect them as you run. It's just every time you use one, it charges back up so you can use it again. So it's kind of nice in that, on one hand, you can't just like spam a grenade, but on the other hand, since it's one and then charge, you really don't want to hoard them because you can't. So it kind of incentivizes you to use them when you got them because you're just going to wait out to get more. No. So I think that's pretty cool. Also, aside from just the normal campaign mode, there's also score attack and horde modes, which I think are pretty good. Like, that's a concept that doesn't really drag me in too much. But if you're the type of person that has like a friend group that wants to actually go in and go for high scores and the like and just kind of hang out together and play, they're great for that. And honestly, for all I know, maybe you can even unlock stuff through those. I honestly have no idea. I stuck with the campaign with my time in the game because that's where I'm a Viking, is campaign. All in all, the only real gripes I had about this game are as follows. One, this is hardly really a gripe. This is just me being me. I was playing it on the handheld mode exclusively. I don't think this is a game that's generally, like, it was originally designed on consoles and also with, like, PCs in mind. So even though it looks fine and plays fine in handheld mode, it's harder to spot certain things. Like, there was one area where you shoot like these three blue orbs on the walls to unlock a door. And for the life of me, it was damn near impossible to see them because I was like squinting trying to find, where the hell is this other orb at? I can't find it. I'd wager being on the TV would have been a lot easier to find something like that. And that also goes for things like money on the ground or collectibles that might be sitting on a table or something. It's a lot harder to see them on this small screen. So that was a problem I had. And also, I guess, of course, like aiming at certain enemies is a little bit of annoyance, but I got better at that as the game progressed. So I'm not going to really chalk it down for that. And the only other thing, which is, again, this is me probably, is when you use the melee attack, the camera zooms in on the guy, almost like a wham-bam sort of thing, like, oh boy, impactful. But I feel like it throws me off if I'm, like, in the middle of a skirmish, and I'm, like, fighting dudes, and I'm like, okay, I gotta just push him off me, do the melee attack. And the camera zooms in on my fist. Like, I don't really need to do that, because now it's going to zoom back up, and I got to get my bearings again to run away or do what I'm going to do. Don't zoom in. And if there's a feature or a feature in the opposite that lets me turn it off, by all means, let me know, and I'll start using it. But I didn't see it, so I was stuck dealing with it, and I hated that. That aside, I honestly think this is a good game to play. I enjoyed it by myself. It would be enjoyable with friends, because when you put people in the game, it increases the enemy counts. And it also kind of has a whole, like, Left 4 Dead sort of element where if someone dies, you can pull them out of a sarcophagus. It's kind of nice. So there's a bit that can be done with that just for, like, a fun element. And, of course, by having multiple people in the game, you can see how the player synergies are interacting, as far as, like, the ambulance equipment and things like that. So, honestly, I'm happy with this game. I think it's worth a person's time. It is a good, just hang out and play some stupid, you know, third-person shooting game. It's not too complex. And it's just fun enough for, like, a good couple afternoons of just hanging out with your friends.
Nice. So $34.99. What do you think of Strange Brigade?
I honestly think it's a decent buy. I think it's worth it.
Cool. Works for me.
Pip, pip. Good show.
I was waiting for something there. Next game to talk about is Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX, developed by Jankin Team, published by Merge Games, released June 22nd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. A legend returns in stunning new detail with Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX. Fire up your power bracelet and relive a platforming classic alongside new modes, levels, and features. Chris, tell us about your time with Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX.
Okay, so Alex Kidd Mineral World. This is a remake of a Sega Master System game from, oh, I don't know, the late 90s? No, it's very much the 80s. So it basically, Alex Kidd was like kind of like Sega's, I don't know if you would say pre-Sonic, but maybe like pre-Sonic sort of set to be the mascot, the monkey boy who would be king. It's very, very old. And, you know, of course, with it comes some of the trappings of olden games. But so this is a platformer that involves the titular character, who is a boy who is also a monkey. You know, he's got, like, the big monkey ears and, like, a tail. And the quest is basically to, like, rescue people who have been turned to stone by the evil King Jonken or something, or General Jonken or something like that. And you basically, yeah, you platform and go in different directions. It's interesting because instead of being like the typical platformer that goes left first, this one goes down first. And it's kind of like the old school Mario. You can't track back. You can only go forward, kind of thing. And you can, like, some blocks are breakable. Some blocks have stuff in them. And usually you kind of have a choice, like, because if you go to, like, get this one block that has something in it, you know, you might not be able to get to the other one in time. It's very floaty, and, like, in that way that, like, Master System games kind of are, if you've played, like, very many Master System games. And here's the kicker. One hit from anything will kill you.
Yay! Retro games!
Yeah. And if you die three times in Alex Kidd, then you, well, you know, unless you get a one up or something, then you have to start the entire stage over. But I don't think they make you start the entire game over unless you choose. So what they've done with the Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX is they took the exact game and kind of painted over it with, like, brand new graphics and brand new music and all this other stuff. I've noted before that this is, like, one of my favorite ways that people do remakes, is that they make it exactly the old game, but, like, with, you know, some modern
pretty fine.
Some modern, yeah. And you know, the first one to do this that I saw was actually the people that made Wonder Boy and Monster World, which is another No, Dragon's Trap, sorry. Which is another, like, you know, Master System to Switch kind of port. Well, it went to all the systems, but anyways. So this one actually does have a one-button toggle between actually playing the original game and playing the remake. So that's how close it is that it actually literally is the old game.
I like when games do that.
Yeah. Now, this wasn't developed by those same people. Therefore, it actually is a little bit different. The new game does have some newness to it. They've rewritten dialogue. They actually added in different things that, you know, like button indicators and like kind of quality of life improvements that even are in the original game. They have a classic mode, which is locked away for new players, so I think that probably is just a one-by-one recreation of the old game. But, you know, the new game, like, nothing gets in the way. It's just better. Like, I can't find one thing to complain about that they've added, and plus if they do have, like, the actual one-to-one original classic, then that's great, too. So here's the other thing that they have added is that now you can toggle on infinite lives.
Oh.
As a way to get through the actual gosh darn game. which is great because, you know, when you die in the game and you haven't gotten a game over, like, there's several checkpoints in the game. It's actually very, you know, the original game was pretty good about checkpoints, but of course you only had a limited amount of lives to utilize them. Whereas this game, if you make a little bit of progress, you'll probably keep that progress if you have infinite lives on. And that's really nice, although you cannot once you start it in a game, you cannot toggle it back off until you started a new game. So you can't just, for some reason, you can't just turn it off and on when you need it. So I'm not sure what's tied into that. Maybe it has to do with one of the unlockables or anything. But and another thing that's actually kind of cool about the old game and the new game is that boss fights are a little different. There is the occasional actual boss fight, and I'm not sure if they've changed any of those. They actually advertise that they have, but so far I haven't noticed. But what happens is that when you're going through, sometimes one of General Junkin's minions will come by to challenge you to Junkin, which is we know in the States as rock, paper, scissors. So you actually have to win at first 2 out of 3, and then later on it gets a little bit more involved. And the cool thing is at least for the first few bosses, I think it's actually predictable, so if you lose you could just go back in and know what they're gonna do. And also one thing that I noticed that's really great about the remake, right, is that the first boss is Stonehead. And when you run into him, he's this monster, or he's a dude, but he has a stone for a head, and it's kind of like, but the thing is, you know, it's like a stone with an eyeball on it. The thing is that, like, in the original game, the stone looks weird. It kind of looks like a fist. And in this remake, they just went all out and made it a fist. Even though he's still called Stonehead, which I think was actually kind of funny. Like, they just literally drew on, like, the fingers and fingernails and stuff instead of just being a bad-looking rock. So I feel like they kind of approached some aspects of the remake with the humor that was always in the series, because it's a humorous game. But yeah, it's still hard as nails, but now it looks gorgeous, and it sounds good, the remade soundtrack's great, and now you have infinite lives, and I really feel like this might get some people into the series on the whole, because there's a lot of Alex Kidd games, and to buy the originals, some of them, like Shinobi World on the Master System, are just, like, really expensive now. So I'm really glad that this is here.
Nice. Well, it is $20. So what are your thoughts on Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX?
I say it is a buy it. That's actually cheaper than Dragon's Trap was when it came out, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was 30.
Was 40 when that came out.
It might have been 40. Yeah,
30 or 40. I know it was up there.
Yeah, and besides the fact that it's still pixel art, like, you know, Dragon's Trap had the really hand drawn look to it. This is still, like, you know, equivalent to the other in quality. So yeah, this is definitely worth picking up. And I don't know if there's going to be a physical version, but $20 is, even though that's on the high side of a download only, like, I think if you are a fan of Alex Kidd, this will be a great way to re-experience it. And if you aren't into it, this is the best place to come right now. Because, yeah, it's solid.
I want to say it is getting a physical version.
It is. Cool. It's got a physical coming. I think like Best Buy is going to carry it at least.
Like GameStop has it. $30 for the physical, $35 on the Switch, because of course.
Well, of course. All right. Well, in that case, if you want to get that physical one, then hop on that. But yeah, this is worth your time and or money.
Carnage saying Xbox version probably shafted for physical. Nope, it is available on Xbox physically.
Just be prepared to suffer this. Fuck.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Empire of Angels 4, developed by Soft Star Entertainment and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released June 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. For the first time since the series began in 1993, oh, my back hurts, Empire of Angels arrives on console as the latest entry in the storied tactical RPG franchise. This updated edition of Empire of Angels 4 features lush 3D graphics, strategic turn-based combat, and a huge cast of gorgeous female characters. Pernell, tell us about your time with Empire of Angels 4.
Well, this is one game you will not suffer through, because the difficulty is not extremely high. But it is fun. I will give it that. So Empire of Angels is a game that takes place in a world that, I guess the word angels exists because there are no men here. This world is devoid of men, and procreation is a mystery to everyone. however, what is not a mystery to everyone is tactical gameplay. It exists in a world where you're pretty much controlling a group of women who are dealing with something called, I guess, like the Namtar illness, where they basically describe it as just like an illness that makes people lose their freaking minds and attack and kill other humans. So the Berserker virus, basically. And you are tasked with, basically starts out with you and your friend being a part of a force that's meant to liberate and like pretty much like take care of people who start to succumb to the illness. But then eventually it opens up more because you come across a person who is capable of purifying and healing those people, which expands the story and eventually leads you down like an interesting little rabbit hole. But as far as gameplay goes, it's done in a streamlined way where it avoids any real sense of complexity that will prevent you from, like, you know, having issues with analysis paralysis and things of that nature. Progression is very linear. Like, you go from node to node as you complete objectives on the map. And then when you go to the next node and you enter it, you go into like a story sequence, which then opens up and leads to a battle. Battle allows you to lay out a series of characters, usually up to like 6 or 7 on the map at a time, which I honestly appreciate. I like when games get to use more like large numbers of people from your army, because if you're going to give me a bunch of people, I should better use as many as freaking possible. Don't scale it back. And you are then sent to send them out into combat. Every character generally has like 1, 2 or so abilities equipped at a time. And unlike a lot of these games, every ability uses MP points, even your basic attack. However, with that in mind, you also regenerate MP every round, too. So, for the most part, you almost never find yourself in a situation where you can't even use your basic attack. I've really never experienced it. But it still is the fact that it does take up MP. And when you come across an enemy, you run up on them, you can use your special attacks on them, or you can use your normal attacks. Pretty much pack room from tit for tat usual gameplay mechanics. However, a few things are interesting and different here. One, when you enter a level, there is generally a set of objectives that the game will give you, like, you know, the typical winning and losing conditions. However, there are two differences compared to the normal number of these games. One is that sometimes it will actually give you conditions ranging from like an easy mode or a hard mode. So, for example, one might say, just get to the exit point. And if you get your units to the exit, you win. But then the hard condition might be, kill everyone. I'm sorry, this game is everyone retreat. You don't want to kill people.
Beat everybody into their underwear.
Literally. I was about to say, unlike, and the funny thing is, when you take all their HP down, they get naked and run away in shame, which is kind of funny. And the other condition would be, like, reward conditions. So Like, it'll tell you, like, basically unlock all the treasure chests or beat all the win the battle within a certain number of rounds. That's typically the norm. Those are the normals. And there's occasional, like, ones that are conditional for that map. And if you can complete all those things, it generally results in you getting greater rewards at the end of the battle. Those rewards being, like, documentation that gives you, like, a little bit of a backstory on a character in the game. It could be more merit points and money. What the hell is a merit point? Well, I'll tell you. At the end of a battle, every character that participates in the battle gets experience points. You don't get experience per attacking, so it's kind of nice in that you don't have to do the Fire Emblem thing where you like kind of make weak people attack strong guys in hopes that they'll get a level up or whatever. It's just win the battle, everybody gets juiced. And in addition to that, you also will get like points that go to like a shared pool. Because again, since individual characters don't level up individually, they also don't level up their classes individually. Instead, there's that shared pool, and when it maxes out and ranks up, you will then be able to advance every character in your party to a new class. Classes being tier-based. So it starts out just being, like, the starting condition would be, like, you know, a cleric, a fighter, and an archer. And any party member can be any of those things. But then after that, so you get to rank 2, now all those tiers can advance to up to four different classes. And then you have to choose which of those classes you want to advance your characters to. And again, all of them can advance to pretty much all of the classes. Though I came across like maybe one or two characters that had unique classes kind of slipped in there that you kind of just have to spot. And when you decide to upgrade the class, you just spend some money, boom, bada bing, they update their stats, they get a new skill or two, and that is that. And they also always keep the skills kind of light. Like, you won't have like 5 skills to use, it's just you'll have like 2 skills, then when you class up, you'll have 2 completely different skills you didn't have before. Or you might have 3 skills you didn't have before. But it's never like, I got 10 skills. What do I use? No. Keep it simple, stupid. And I'm actually kind of okay with that because it focuses on you just like throwing your characters out, having fun with the ridiculous animation and art because everybody's got wacky big eyes and stuff. And nothing, even though the story is serious, nothing on the battlefield actually is. One of my favorite classes is the Performer. It's literally a character that rolls on a ball and then bounces on their head when they're stationary. Like, it's the character. And then the character, my Knight class character, is riding a horse with googly eyes. I'm good for that. This game itself is also, I meant to mention also, if you feel like you need to level up your characters further, like beyond what they are, there is also usually a map or two during a chapter where you can just kind of go back and level up characters by like being this map with those respective enemies that are on it. Overall, I find the game to be pretty fun. The music is fine. The battles are fun.
Speaking of the music, could we just take a second to appreciate the fucking song that comes on when you just start the game? That is quality, like, anime rock right there.
It very much reminded me of a Compile Heart game in that regard, like how like they get the nice rock, like the poppy rock music going, and they have all like the character images, like this character, voiced by this person. And also, while we're on the mention of like, you know, giving good credit where credit's due, I don't know if other people feel this way, but I actually felt kind of happy. This is a Chinese game. Like, it was done in Taiwan, it was made in Taiwan. It's kind of funny to say that because like read the bottom of a bottle, but I digress. This was made in Taiwan, and the dialogue, I believe, is in Chinese, which, if you've been playing JRPGs and stuff for years, you've gotten really used to hearing, you know, Japanese subtitle with English. So booting this game up and hearing everyone speaking in Chinese threw me off guard. I was like, whoa, this is different. This feels different. I'm okay with this. I like this. You know? So, and it's like, it makes me happy to see, like, you know, games coming out of other locations aside from the West and the East. Like, I'd be happy to see more games come out of there. If as long as they're quality games, of course, I don't need no shovelware rinky dink them. But good quality games, I'm fine with that. Bring them more. Bring more. But this is a good game. I am honestly fond of it. I, again, still chuckle at the fact that every person in this world is a woman. Because, again, where does the procreation happen? Do they have, like, incubators in the basement? or maybe that's where the angels come in. The angels just drop children.
Maybe. They just appear.
Children, poof. I'm good for either thing, but it's a good game. I think it's fun. And it is a good product to have access to on the Xbox. I think it's also on the Switch.
It's on everything. Right? It is on Xbox, Switch, and PS4. It is $20. It is Empire of Angels 4. What do you say?
I think it's a good time. I'd even go with buying this one too. Just again, don't come in here expecting some kind of, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics or even Fire Emblem. Oh no, I guess again, not even Fire Emblem level customization because there's no character bonds. And you're not buying equipment to equip your characters with.
Yeah, this looks nice.
If people are interested in a physical, there is available for the Switch on PlayAsia. They have a standard edition for $30 and then a special edition for $40 that comes with a soundtrack and a manual and fun shit like that. Only 2,000 of them being made, so Chris, jump on that quick.
Well, hopefully it lasts till Friday. I don't know. We'll see.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Cross the Moon, developed by Patrick Rainville and Hanabira, published by Rattlelake Games, released June 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and Switch for $4.99. Mystery visual novel seen through the eyes of sibling vampires and an out-of-town cop as they unravel a strange mystery at the heart of their broken country. Vampires, Cole.
Immediately get called in when there's vampires, and I'm not mad about it. Normally I would be a little more like, it's a visual novel, right? But I actually really enjoy vampire stories, so this one was kind of right up my alley. It's a really good blend of weird and murder mystery and plot twist and all the kind of good stuff that I like when I'm looking for a vampire story. I don't want to like harp on it because it is just a narrative. Because it's a visual novel, like there's not even the chance to like make choices or anything to change the story. You just read it. So I don't want to like give anything away from it. I do have a couple of minor like nitpicks. I appreciate that there is very minimal animation going on with the character design here. I noticed it. There was like one that was a little on the questionable side, but for the most part, there's not much for animation, and I appreciated that. Although I do think the artist, it sounds mean to say it, but the artist has a little bit of what we call same face syndrome, where everybody looks identical. And it did kind of make it a little harder to keep up with the story at times because you were like, the only way you knew that there was a difference between characters was the hairstyle might be different. Because there's no colors for the characters, they're all like this very generic, inoffensive, grazy ink wash kind of color. So there's not anything as far as like identifying information goes visually with them other than like their hair, or their clothes or minor details on the face. But all of their face shape and facial features are so similar that sometimes you can really lose the characters. That's just an artsy nitpick. The actual setting for the story is a fictional metropolis called L'Amour. I hope I pronounced that right. I don't know because there's no voice acting here. There's not even like the occasional or, you know, whatever that you sometimes get with visual novels where like they'll interject the little gasps or a hee or something.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
No, but there are 100,000 words of text.
There's a lot to read.
There's a lot of reading in this.
Which I'm actually really on board for. I will say the achievements are tied to finding these collectibles that are in the game. If it weren't for tutorial videos on YouTube, I don't know how anybody found this shit. Like, there's no indication of, oh, hey, you should press B now to collect this. It's just, if you're just playing the game and don't know that they're there and don't know that that's what you're supposed to collect, you're going to play it a lot without getting any of the achievements. Because at least half of them are tied to those collectibles that you have no indication exist. Because for all the rest of the game, there are no choices, there are no buttons, there's no interaction. It's just sit back and read. Which I didn't mind, but if they are going to put in something like that, then as far as the collectible goes, it would be nice if there was some kind of visual cue for it. I get the element of like wanting to make something an Easter egg or a hidden collectible, but man, not even just any kind of visual indicator at all that you should be interacting. If there were other interactions in the game, I wouldn't mind it so much, right? But if you've gone to the point where these collectibles start popping up and you've just been reading along because that's what the game wants you to do, then you have no idea that, oh, all of a sudden now I could press a button. So that's really my biggest beef, is that I just wish there had been some kind of visual indicator for those. But otherwise, I really liked the story. I thought they did a good job of like writing a narrative that was interesting and a really cool concept, but didn't rely on a lot of the common visual novel or paranormal romance tropes that we typically see. There is a little bit of romance going on with some of the characters, but overall it was just like, no, this is a really cool murder mystery type of story, and it's set in this world where humans and vampires coexist, and good luck from there. And I was really on board with it, but like I said, just a visual indicator for the collectible would have been nice. Otherwise, it was great.
Well, Pernell, did you get to dabble with this one at all?
Sadly, I did not, because as dumb as it may sound, I kind of got hooked on the Empire of Angels.
You can 1K it in 5 minutes.
Oh, of course you can.
Of course you can, because it's a rattle like a visual novel. But I do think you should at least pay a little attention to the story, because it is a good one. One of my other favorite things about it is that there are these really cool scenes for the different environments, and it's not a hand-drawn environment for these scenes the same way that the character models are. On one hand, like they're better on their own elements, but when they're together, they still kind of work, because they're different enough that like they contrast in a way, and it still kind of works. But I like the way they've done the visuals for the backgrounds and stuff, because you can kind of tell that they're just like photographs of areas that have a color filter over them, but they really work to set the tone and help move the story along. So
there's over 1,000 photographs.
Yeah, they did really good. There's a couple instances where, like, there's a couple instances where, like, they kind of, like, you can tell they took a photo and put a negative filter on it and then put a color filter on it, and you're like, that's not as good one. But some of them have some really cool effects to them, and I really like them from an artistic point.
Well, $5, what do you say?
Yeah, $5. I think it's a good one. I give it a buy it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is Shapes.io and the Puzzle DLC, developed by Tobias Springer, published by Tobias Springer and DoYoYo Games. Puzzle DLC released June 22nd on Steam for Shapes.io for $4.99. Shapes.io is available for $6.99. Solve the puzzles by creating the given shapes, but space and buildings are limited. There are no resources, and you only get a given amount of shape types and colors to work with. Chris, I know this one looked really confusing. Were you able to put the pieces together?
Yeah, it's gotta. I'll let you finish. Either your voice changed or somebody else is laughing now.
I paid Pernell to do it.
Yeah, I know. I
was hired him.
It's funny though, because it lined up perfectly, because I'm seeing your webcam on delay. And so you were laughing, but it was Pernell's voice.
Nice.
It was great. Anyway,
okay, Shapes.io and the Puzzle DLC. What is this?
Okay, so this is a kind of minimalist factory game. It looked confusing to me. I couldn't really tell what was going on, but it has a good tutorial. So, you know, kind of teaches you how to use all the different things. So basically what it is there's a you know, things kind of occur on this grid. There's different clusters of different shapes and colors, and there is a thing in the middle with a shape on it, and it says how many you need. Now, the idea is to use all the tools that you have in order to get, like, material of the right shape and color from one of those clusters to that center in order to meet the demand. Now, you know, you can draw, like, yeah, there's, like, the things that you start off with are just, like, simple tubes, and, like, eventually there's one where, like, you need a shape that's half of, like, a square, and, you know, the shapes that are around are squares, so they give you a tool that cuts the squares in half, and then you can build, you know, tubes going from there to the, well, I guess they're kind of more like conveyor belts, I don't know, it's, they're abstract shapes, so, eventually, they start introducing color, where you have to color certain pieces. They introduce complex pieces where it's like, it's this kind of shape that involves like a quarter of this shape and this shape and this shape. And you have to like kind of build all the pieces necessary to get that shape going. It really feels a little bit like, how people like build and modify like circuit boards and things like that. You know, running lines, like, and, you know, doing certain things. I don't know how to do it myself, so I can't describe it very well. But it has, like, that, it has that very, like, you know, focus on doing it right and doing it efficiently. Because sometimes those numbers get real big, and if you don't do it efficiently, then you're just going to sit there and wait for, like, an hour for, you know, the thing to fill up. Now, the thing about this game, unlike some other games that are similar, it's very low pressure. There's no timer. There's no, like, enemies. There's no, you know, failure. It's just, if you make a huge mess of things, you can undo anything that you've done. You know, you just right-click on whatever you've, you know, if you, you know, click on the same tool that you just put down, and then right-click on the tool that you put down, and it goes away. It's that simple. And as you progress through the stages, it actually retains the some of the stuff that you've built. So, you know, you kind of have, you don't have to start over from scratch every time you do a new thing. And eventually, I guess, I haven't done this yet, but they eventually kind of introduce this sort of, not really like an endless mode, but just like these really expansive maps that, you know, some people have taken to building really elaborate things. I was reading in the Steam comments that somebody was like, oh, I think I can actually build a computer inside this game.
Jesus.
So yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it's just this kind of cool tinkery thing. And then, you know, some people are like, you know, taking it to the next level. So that's a really cool deal. Like, it's, you know, it's really simple on its approach. Besides the fact that it has like good music and stuff, like there's not really much to say about how it looks. It's for people who want a nice, like, chilled way to engage their brain. Like, you know, it's just, like, what I think really good puzzle games are. Nice. And it's nice that like the pressure's kind of taken out of it. Okay. So the puzzle DLC introduces, a whole bunch of like pre-made puzzles that are much smaller in scale and, you know, much simpler to use. But they do ask that you at least complete level 12 of the main game before you start, because they're going to have you using tools that the tutorials will teach you how to use, but the puzzle section is not going to teach you how to use them. They're just going to give them to you and expect that you know how to use them. And yeah, those are pretty good. I burned through a few of them. You know, it's like, some of them are really small. Some of them get much more elaborate. You know, it's like anything. It you know, starts off with like little, you know, 8x8 or whatever, and then like grows into like just this giant thing that you'll, you know, spend a lot of time trying to make. Now, here's the other cool thing about it is that they have community made, user made puzzles, and they allow you to make your own. So they actually, they give you the tools that you need to, like, you know, really just keep yourself endlessly challenged, because, you know, this game is very popular. I think they passed 250,000 downloads in their first year.
Wow.
And it's very cheap and it's open source. So like people are really jumping on this one. So I don't think there's any sign of it like slowing down in terms of content. So yeah, it's like for just a few bucks, it's like you can pretty much make this your new obsession. And it nice. Seems really set to be that way.
Well, $7 for Shapes.io, $5 for the puzzle DLC. They also have a deluxe package with the soundtrack for $15. What do you think of this bundle?
Yeah, I think that it's all good. And, you know, Steam has a promotion going right now on it, too, for just the base game and for the bundles. So, yeah, if you are intrigued by this and you like building things, you like tinkering, but you don't like... you don't like the game to be mad at you for any reason because you literally can't mess this up. Like you can only just do it right or do something else. Like, so yeah, I think this is a really unique experience and that,
drink.
Yeah, well, damn it.
And that, I think this game actually earns the epithet, even though it does appear on lists. That's like top 15 games that are like Factoria. Oh, which is another popular game in the genre.
Well, it sounds like this one is worth checking out, so.
Yeah, it's a buy it. Go check it out.
Cool.
And go like go watch some videos of like some stuff people have made. It's really cool.
Yeah, it looks fascinating. It's just I'm so confused by screenshots, so I got to sit and watch some gameplay of it.
It looks intimidating. I swear that by the first three levels of the game, you're going to like be like, "Okay, I get this."
All right, well, we're going to wrap up the show with two quick previews. The first one is Hello Puppets Midnight Show, developed by Otherworld Interactive, published by Tiny Build, releasing late 2021. Hello Puppets Midnight Show is a stealth horror adventure set in the 1980s on the set of a children's TV show. You're a master puppet maker whose prize creations, the Handyman, have come to life and are hunting you. Play hide-and-seek against advanced AI that forces you to adapt and improvise. Cole, tell us about your time checking out the demo of Hello Puppets Midnight Show.
This feels very similar to Five Nights at Freddy's meets Emily Wants to Play, in that it just kind of takes like the concept of things kids enjoy are terrifying. In this case, it's a Muppet show. And then puts you in a situation where you're basically playing a modified version of hide and seek with these horrible puppets that are trying to get a hold of you. You'll need to find batteries in the world to solve puzzles so that you can get from area to area, all while the AI is growing increasingly more intelligent. As far as I can tell, this uses like the Hello Neighbor type of AI that just learns what the fuck you're doing, so you can't keep using the same tactics and tricks to get around it. There's four bosses, and they will all find horrible ways to fuck you up when they find you, and they will find you. There was a limit, of course, to how much you could play in the demo. I think it was around a half hour's worth of game time. So you don't really get to experience a whole lot. And given that it was a demo, I had some issues with it. So like my controller, even though it said there was controller support, the controller did not want to work at all. And I had to give up and just use my mouse and keyboard. But I mean, for a demo, you can't really bitch about that too much. It was just unfortunate that I couldn't like go through it a few different ways and really try out the AI and see how much I could fuck with them. There's that. But, you know, it's as far as like, you know, is this something that you want to keep an eye on or something, which is usually what we're wondering with a preview. If you like the way that the AI in Hello Neighbor stalks you and like learns your shit and throws you off, and you like that things kids enjoy is creepy kind of storytelling, like Five Nights at Freddy's, then you're probably gonna be really fucking happy with this game.
So something we should definitely keep our eyes on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be fucked up.
A good way to put it.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Well, we got one final preview to talk about. That is called Fantasy Network, developed and published by Raven Travel Studios. Releasing sometime this year on Steam, Fantasy Network is a Metroidvania game with a social media twist, a Socialvania. Explore the colorful world of Hollua and chat to hand-drawn larger-than-life characters to discover a story that runs deeper than it may seem. Chris, tell us about your time with the demo for Fantasy Network.
Okay, well, yeah, it's got a strange setting. Like, due to some event that is sort of revealed, like, by talking to some people, most old people are gone, and so culture is basically run by young people. And so the president of the world, quote-unquote, like, effectively, is like, by the way, I'm getting kind of old now. He has, like, a light beard now. And he's like, I'm getting old, so I'm retiring. And if you want to be the next president, then you have to complete, like, 5 talent contests and, you know, whatever. And so you play as a character. You either create one or choose a template, a pre-made, like, character. And then, yeah, you basically are tasked with becoming the next president because somebody kidnaps your mom. And they're like, yeah, when you become president, we'll return her. I don't know. It's odd. And so you go around, and the demo has one of the talent contests that you can actually do, but that does not mean it's light on content. So basically, you can walk around this town, and it very much, it's a side-scroller, like, platformer. It really reminds me a lot, actually, and I just mentioned this game before, but the remake of Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap, that actually, it seems to be, like, that kind of style, except that everything's, like, the backgrounds are, like, this kind of cel-shaded 3D, and they look really good, like, especially the lighting. I actually really like the look of this game. And, you know, you go around and talk to people, and very quickly, you have a phone that you get some apps for, and that has its own, like, little menu. And as you talk to people, you friend them on your, like, social medias and stuff, and have discussions about, like, different topics that you know, if you interact with, like, a movie poster, then that movie poster gets added to your social app, and you can, like, talk about that, and, you know, replies just happen, like, automatically and stuff. And this is all to kind of collect a bunch of friends, and I guess gain a lot of, you know, become an influencer, essentially. The real practical benefit of this is not immediately apparent. They do tell you that it will unlock more stuff and, like, get you more things as you go along the game. But yeah, you go to do the cooking contest, which you can start by doing a, which is the first, I guess, talent thing. And you can start by, like, going in and doing a tutorial round, but to actually do the real round, you require a MacGuffin, and to not an Egg McMuffin, but a just a crocodile egg is what the object is. So they're like, well, you might try the local platforming section over there where there's a crocodile. And so, of course, you go through a very, very large platforming section where, you know, you fight enemies, like, straight up, like, sword and shield style, and they drop coins, which you can use to purchase better equipment, both, like, aesthetic stuff and, like, you know, actual beneficial stuff, like a real sword instead of a stick, etc. And, yeah, once you get the egg, then you do the cooking contest, and if you win it, then demo's over.
Well, it sounds like an interesting little experiment and twist on the genre. What are your thoughts? Is this something we should be keeping our eyes on?
Definitely. Well, of course you can. I would say that, yeah, the download of the it's a nice, like, meaty demo. So I would definitely say check it out. I enjoy the look of it. The only other game I guess I could compare it to would be Super Epic, The Entertainment Wars, since that one had a kind of a social media aspect to it, in that, you know, you kind of use your phone to play addicting mini games, like your actual phone in real life.
Yeah.
Because they gave you bonus games through QR codes. It's not quite that clever, but, Yeah, it is kind of cool that, you know, you have like an app menu on top of your regular items menu. And it, I didn't really get a good sense of how that's to be implemented in the real game. But it is nice to like read comments and kind of make friends, as it were, which is, you know, something I'm slow to do in real life. So,
all right.
Well, yeah, I like it.
Free demo on Steam. Check it out. That's it for this episode. Made it through fairly quick, fairly painless. I'm going to go and throw up. So everyone have a wonderful night. Anyone have any final words?
Don't make sure you place that bucket where it needs to be. Dangerous game when you miss. Also, feel better soon, man.
Yeah, feel better soon.
That's a gross ending. Feel better soon. You're supposed to say, insult me.
Well, I did. I told you to aim the bucket properly. You should need to be told that. Look at you.
There's an insult implied there.
Oh, mercy.